Femtech is one of the fastest growing areas in IP, but what does it cover? Hello, I'm Lisa Leong. This is From Idea to Intellectual Property, a podcast about today's big ideas and the IP considerations behind them. Alira Hudson-Gophers is the principal at Spruson & Ferguson and is going to tell us all about why Femtech is the next big thing. So Alira, last year the New York Times said Femtech was healthcare's next big thing. What is Femtech?
So Femtech, in essence, is female technology, but it can encompass anything. So it can encompass female-specific things, so periods, babies, you know, breasts, all that kind of stuff. And it can also encompass health technology around conditions where women either exhibit different symptoms, respond differently to treatments. So really broad ranging, anything to do with women and their health.
And who are some of the major players in this space? What are they making?
So there's all kinds of things. If you think about women and their health, there's typical female products. So, you know, feminine hygiene products, anything from, you know, new organic materials used in tampons.
100% organic cotton tampons with no chlorine bleach, pesticides, dioxins, or dyes. Because what's inside matters.
Period underwear.
They're machine washable and easy to care for, so you can use them again and again, just like a regular pair of undies, but with all-day comfort and built-in leak protection. See how they work for yourself.
The cups that are used for periods.
You won't even feel it. Unlike other period products, which you have to change every few hours, Flex can be worn for 12 hours. That means you don't have to worry about it while you're at school or at work, and you don't have to worry about it while you're sleeping.
There's companies who are focused on babies and postnatal health, companies focused on breast cancer, and then companies that are focused on the female specific responses to treatments and conditions in things like heart disease, autoimmune conditions, osteoarthritis. Those traditional health areas where women might have specific needs that are different to the general population.
Why do you think Femtech has only emerged as a concept? It feels like in the last few years only.
It's basically sort of the stars aligning. There's a whole lot of different areas where the female contribution is being recognised. You know, women are half of the population.
Menstruation and periods have long been considered a woman's problem, too taboo to discuss openly. But not anymore. Investors have started paying close attention to periods and female menstruation cycles because they are part of a promising industry called Femtech.
And so there's lots of areas where we're looking at women and how they're being empowered, how they're contributing, and how they're being recognised. And I think Femtech is no different.
How big are we talking here and how big could it be?
So, look, potentially huge.
And while government data shows that women spend up to 80% more than men on their health care, a recent McKinsey report found that outside of cancer, women's health issues garner just 2% of healthcare investments. But a new generation of women in health tech is looking to close that gap. And as Bertha Coombs reports, investors, they are paying attention.
We're talking lots of existing conditions where the specific female requirements might be as big as the potential that already exists across the main population. And then we're talking about women-specific conditions that haven't previously had particular focus. So there might be a product available, but there's also a growing need for sustainability in the products that are used to make sure that those materials are safe for the body and this emergence of different products that better suit the need of the buyer.
So these issues that you're talking about have been around for ages. So why has Femtech only emerged as a concept in the last few years?
I think we're seeing a lot of stars align, if you will. There's a lot of movements about empowering women, a lot of recognition of the amazing talent we have in half of our population and what we can do to make sure that things are equal. And so I think that's helping founders of these companies, and there are more female founders in this area. So if we look at Femtech industries, there's a real increase in inventors who are female in those industries. And that's not unexpected because it's an issue that affects that person. And so they think of a solution to overcome the problem they've had or the experience that they've had. And so we go from general technology where female inventors might be listed on, you know, one or more female inventors on say 15% of patents. Whereas in moving to Femtech, it goes up to about 35%.
And I'm thinking of something like Viagra, which was patented way back in 1996 and is now worth almost $2 billion a year.
Viagra, America's most prescribed ED treatment, can help you enjoy a more satisfying sexual experience. Ready to talk to your doctor? Find out how.
Is that the potential here?
Yeah, absolutely. We're talking all of the big health areas. You know, we have heart health, we have respiratory health, mental health, reproductive health. You know, all of the normal areas of health apply to women. And so any kind of product potential that exists across existing products, there's no reason why it couldn't be applicable across the femtech area.
So you've got us very excited about femtech. Where does IP law come in, Alira?
So we're seeing some really positive signs with many of these emerging femtech companies in that they are interested in protecting their intellectual property, whether it be by the formal protection mechanisms such as patents, trademarks and designs, or whether they're looking at trade secrets, if that's something that's applicable to them, and being aware of where they're manufacturing these devices and looking at what protection they have in the countries that they're manufacturing in, what countries they want to be marketing in. And so making sure they've got protection in those countries and also thinking about who their competitors might be and make sure that they're protecting themselves, whether they're in the market of their competitor or not, but they're protecting themselves there as well.
Have you got any horror stories about people who haven't protected their rights?
None specifically, but often what happens is what people think is their initial invention or their initial commercial advantage and goes into their first applications might not be the thing that turns up in their product at the end. I'd encourage people when they're putting together their IP protection to really think broadly and make sure that their protection does cover. If there's two or three options and they might go in the different directions, try to include them as much as possible, because you don't want to get down the line and find that the scope of your patent claim doesn't actually include the thing that you're trying to protect, or exclude a competitor from doing something that might not be as good as what you're doing, but they've taken away one of the claimed features and they can go in and get some market share from you, you know, with an inferior product because you haven't had the appropriate scope of claim.
So I want to talk about your background in engineering. So you mentioned that you studied as an engineer. How does engineering come to life in this area, do you think?
I studied biomedical engineering and mechatronic engineering. That was my initial degree. At the time, it was a bit of a strange combination because mechatronics was quite new and there weren't really that many products that had a medical application with electronics in them and wiring and things like that. But it's really nice to see that over the past couple of decades, that combination has really come to life. And so that intersection of biocompatibility, for example, if it's implantable, coding and electronics so that things can connect to your phone or send data back or just simply operate in the way that they need to. It's really fun working on some of the inventions that come through in the femtech space, but in a whole lot of different medical applications as well.
And what was that word? Mechatronics.
Mechatronics. So mechatronics, it's a merge. It's kind of mechanical engineering and electronics and electrical. So you do a bit of computer programming, electrical wiring, forces and moments like mechanical, all sort of mushed together.
That's incredible. So can you describe an invention that got you particularly interested and intrigued?
Not a recent invention, but I did work for a time at Cochlear.
2 years ago, I woke up and I couldn't hear anything anymore. To lose hearing music and not hear birds, not hear my dog barking. I wanted to stay in the hearing world. So I got a cochlear implant. Think about putting something on your head and suddenly I can hear again, and then I can take this off and then it's complete silence.
So, you know, it has an external component with the microphone to capture all the sound. It has an internal component with an electrode that goes into the inner ear and transmission of the sound signal into the internal component to then transmit the signal via electrical pulses to the nerves inside the ear. So that's, I guess, a really nice example of all of those areas of my background fitting together.
The thing I'm really excited about is to have the ability to diagnose or at least monitor health and well-being from our homes. Where do you see things heading and what are you excited about?
In the femtech space, there's some interesting things in the period tracking and I guess cycle tracking to have a look at when you might be most fertile if you're trying to conceive. So I play a lot of sport, and so There's also some interesting work at the moment about how women, how female athletes respond at different times in their cycle. And so I think there's another leap there where those watches that have all your fitness data on them could potentially also suggest, well, how heavy a training load should you have today based on where you're at in your cycle. So I think it's a nice, I think I see the opportunity as being a nice loop between the data that goes in and then feedback and then changing behaviours and outcomes.
Hang on, I love that side reference to sport. Didn't you represent Australia in handball, Alira?
I did.
Australia!
The national team of Australia. Number 10, Alira Hudson Gophers.
So handball and beach handball. So I'm actually about to go to Greece for the World Championships for beach handball.
So do you monitor yourself? Do you use FemTech for your sports endeavours?
I'm going to use my smartwatch, more so for beeping at me when I have to do the intervals as opposed to anything else. But it is always quite fun having a look afterwards and saying, you know, seeing where it was in terms of, was that improving your fitness or are you just overloaded? Or so that feedback is really interesting.
And I think it's really interesting, I guess, this idea of FemTech, because I had noticed when I was looking for advice as someone who is also sporty, that often there's an absence of the right advice for women. So whether it be intermittent fasting or the ways in which you get optimal performance, often the data has an absence of female data in there. So it could actually be dangerous for my health rather than the other way. What are you finding?
So I think, that takes me back. When I was in high school, I had a physics teacher who loved to talk about crash test dummies and crash zones. And that's an area where it was all, you know, men who are 5'10" and that was the dummy that got put in, and we see what happened to that person. And most women aren't that tall. Most kids, you know, there's a whole lot of different shapes and types of bodies. And that area has come a long way. We now have a whole lot of different crash test dummies. Even if we look at construction, for example, we've finally got high-vis vests that are actually tailored to women's bodies. So there's a whole lot of industries where there's this recognition that there are lots of different people that need to be catered for, and lots of different people where we need to capture the data specific to that group and see what it tells us about whatever application or benefit we're trying to achieve. So I can see that happening in FemTech, in some of those conditions I mentioned, a greater awareness that we need to look at how do women respond to the drugs or how do women exhibit symptoms associated with those conditions. So yeah, it'll be really interesting to see where some of this tailoring of data goes.
How does it feel to be part of this movement to spearhead some of this new technology and this contribution to our society?
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's one of the reasons why being a patent attorney is fantastic, because you do get to be on the cusp of all these really new, exciting things, but also with people who are really passionate about what they've just invented. And so FemTech is no different from that. It's just a new era of tech. Really fortunate that it's in that health tech space, which is, you know, which is what I do every day. Yeah, just really fun to see what kind of things people think of and what they do with it.
You know, there's a part of me that is curious about even the label of FemTech, you know, the fact that we need to ring fence technology that is not whatever. I find that interesting and curious in itself, and you know, I hope that one day we don't need to label it FemTech, but I'm sure that it's probably useful at this point in time.
Yeah, I think that would be the ultimate success, is it's not just FemTech, it's just healthcare.
Thank you so much, Alira.
Thank you, Lisa.
That was Alira Hudson-Gophers, principal at Spruson & Ferguson. Thanks to our producer, Cara Jensen-McKinnon. This podcast is brought to you by IPH, Asia Pacific's leading intellectual property services group, helping you turn your big ideas into big business. And I'm your host, Lisa Leong. Bye for now.